We've been talking about various aspects of tefillah. Last week we began to talk a little bit about the disagreement between the Rambam and the Ramban as to whether the nature of tefillah is fundamentally a mitzvah d'oraisa or whether it's considered to be only a mitzvah midrabbanan. We're going to pick up on that theme and talk about the women's obligation in tefillah and try to understand a little bit more about that. So let's just recap what we started with very briefly last week. The Rambam is of the opinion, when he makes his count of what the 613 mitzvahs are, many of the Rishonim have various counts of what they consider to be part of the Taryag mitzvahs or what might not be. What's surprising is that the Ramban writes that perhaps this whole assumption that there are 613 mitzvahs is not so clear in the first place. Maybe there are more, maybe there are less. Who said that the magic number 613 is the right one? But we assume 613 is the amount of mitzvahs that we have, and the question is, what is considered to be a part of that count, and what perhaps should not be included? So the Rambam there writes in Hilchos Tefillah, as well as in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, that the mitzvah of tefillah is considered to be a biblical commandment. That's a mitzvah d'oraisa, and he learns it from the pasuk, "La'avdo b'chol levavchem." The Gemara tells us, "La'avdo b'chol levavchem," you should serve Hashem with all your heart. "Ezohi avodah shebelev," what is considered to be a service to God with your heart, zu tefillah, says the Gemara. And therefore the Rambam says it's a clear indication that the mitzvah of tefillah is a biblical commandment, it's a mitzvah d'oraisa. The Ramban strongly disagrees. The Ramban disagrees, we're going to have to start paying you. It's part of our staff, make copies every week. So the Ramban strongly disagrees, and he thinks it does not belong in the count of minyan mitzvahs. He says, yes, it's a nice idea, it's only midrabanan, it is not a mitzvah. It's not like shofar, it's not like lulav, it's not like tzitzis, it's not like Shabbos. It's something that is only midrabanan in its very nature. So says the Ramban, what does it mean when you say, la'avdo b'chal levavchem, we have an obligation to serve Hashem with all our heart? What does that mean? It simply should have meant what the Rambam says. That's tefillah. You serve Hashem with your heart when you daven to Him. Says the Ramban, no. That pasuk, la'avdo b'chal levavchem, the Ramban says is, kol avodosenu, that everything that we do should be lekel yizbarach b'chal avavenu. Every activity that we do should be completely and totally for the Ribono Shel Olam, geared toward Him. We should be thinking about Him. We should be understanding what our relationship is all about with Him. And that, says the Ramban, is what the pasuk means on a very simple level. Avdo b'chal avavchem has nothing to do with tefillah at all, and that's why he takes it out of the count. The Ramban then scales it back a little bit, and he says, well, maybe I disagree with the Rambam that tefillah is not a mitzvah d'oraisa, but perhaps when a person is in a state of crisis, when a person is in a state of an emergency, maybe then even I agree, says the Ramban. When it's an eis tzara, maybe even I agree that tefillah should be a mitzvah d'oraisa. That's what the Ramban argues. Maybe it should be, maybe it shouldn't be, but on a regular basis, says the Ramban, he doesn't believe that tefillah is a biblical commandment. Sir of Soloveitchik pointed out very beautifully, we mentioned it last week, that the Rambam also agrees that tefillah is only something that has to be done at an eis tzara, at a state of emergency. But Rav Soloveitchik said the Rambam is of the opinion that every day of life is considered to be an emergency. Every day of life is considered to be so unpredictable, so arbitrary. Things happen to people that they would never expect at all. And therefore, Rav Soloveitchik said a person should be living life with the understanding that every day is a real crisis. Every day is an emergency. And you're at the mercy of God. And that's why you have to put oneself out to daven every day, because that is an eis tzara. So the Rambam and the Ramban agree that tefillah is only be eis tzara, but they disagree about what the definition of an eis tzara is. Is an eis tzara only when you have something that the whole world sees as a real crisis, a real emergency, or is it something just living through life which is so fickle and, as we know, so unpredictable, that is also considered to be an eis tzara? So when you sum up this disagreement between the Rambam and the Ramban, again, the Beis Yosef points us to another point that the Ramban makes, and that is, even if you assume that tefillah is only midrabanan, the Ramban argues, on Yom Tov, tefillah should be a mitzvah d'oraisa, because the pasuk says, Mikra Kodesh, a holy assemblage. What does it mean, a holy assemblage? So therefore, the Ramban argues in Parshas Amor, maybe you should say that on Yom Tov there's a special mitzvah to daven, which is surprising, because very often on Yom Tov we're busy in the kitchen, and we're busy with the kids and all the grandchildren and everything, and that's the one time of year that we might not have time to daven. But here the Ramban points us to the fact that on Yom Tov there might be more of a reason to daven than on any other day in the year. So be that as it may, we have this disagreement, and if you look in the Sefer HaChinuch, which is number Aleph here on the source sheet, the Sefer HaChinuch sums up this disagreement between the Rambam and the Ramban. And he says as follows, Noheges mitzvah zu b'chol makom u'b'chol zman. This mitzvah of tefillah applies b'chol makom, in any community. It doesn't matter if you live in Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't matter if you live in Chutz La'aretz. B'chol zman, it doesn't matter if you live at a time when there's a Beis HaMikdash, or if one lives at a time like ours that unfortunately there is no Beis HaMikdash. Then he says, "Bizacharim uven akevos." This applies to both men and to women. Now the Sefer Achinuch is a Sefer that only enumerates mitzvahs d'araisa, and here he writes that the mitzvah d'araisa is for men and for women equally. V'ha'over alzeh, somebody who violates this mitzvah and does not daven, v'amad yom v'layla below tefila klal, somebody goes through a whole 24-hour period without davening at all, bitel aseizeh, you are mevatel the mitzvah. It's the same as not shaking lulav, it's the same as not keeping Shabbos. You have not fulfilled the obligation of tefila, says the Sefer Achinuch. Let's say you have somebody who has an emergency, somebody who has a particular personal need, and they do not call out to Hashem at that time, lehoshio, to save you. Then even the Ramban would agree that you're in, that you have neglected the mitzvah hasei. And here he ends off and he says something which is very unusual of the Sefer Achinuch. Usually he enumerates what the mitzvah is, what the guidelines are. But here he says, "Va'on shel gadol miyod." Somebody chooses to neglect the mitzvah of tefillah and not daven when they're supposed to. He says, "On shel gadol miyod." The punishment for that is something that we take very seriously. Shehu kemeisir hashgachas Hashem me'alav, because you're showing, you're disregarding the fact that God has a very serious presence in your life. You're disregarding the fact that God is supposed to be there and supposed to be called upon whenever we have an emergency, whenever we have something wrong. And therefore, writes the Sefer Achinuch, this is something. It's not like not shaking the lulav. It's not like not blowing the shofar. This is considered to be something which is much more serious, because it's fundamentally neglecting the centrality of how much the Ribono Shel Olam is supposed to be a presence in our lives, and therefore says the Sefer Achinuch that tefillah is a mitzvah we must take very seriously. So let's discuss now, the Sefer Achinuch wrote that this mitzvah seems to be equally an obligation for men and for women. In order to understand what the Sefer Achinuch says and to flesh that point out a little more and to understand really what the nature of the obligation is for women, let's just go on a general overview of mitzvahs in general. What is women's obligation in general mitzvahs? So we have a very important Gemara, Maseches Kiddushin, Daf Chaf Tes Amud Aleph. This is number Beis, where the Gemara tells us the famous principle that many of us probably know. V'chol mitzvah saseh shahazman grama. Whenever you have a mitzvah that is a time-bound mitzvah, anashim chayavim, we assume that men are obligated to perform those mitzvahs, v'nashim peturus, and women are exempt. Women do not have that obligation. Why women should be exempt, we'll talk in a few minutes. Which exceptions to the rule might there be, we'll also get to in a few minutes. Where do we assume this rule might apply or might not apply? This is all what we're going to discuss, and then we'll channel it all into the discussion and how it relates to tefillah. So the Gemara here just lays down the rule that anytime you have a time-bound mitzvah, we assume that women are not obligated to do it. So, for example, the mitzvah of tzitzis, since the pasuk says, "Re'isa moso uzacharta maskal mitzvah sashem," it says you're supposed to see the tzitzis. The only time you could see tzitzis is during the day. They didn't used to have electric light, so once it was nighttime, you couldn't see anything. So therefore, the Gemara assumes women are not obligated in tzitzis, because tzitzis only have to be worn during the day. They don't have to be worn at night. And therefore, we assume that women are putter, are exempt from that obligation. The mitzvah of tefillin, since we only wear tefillin by yom, we only wear them during the day, and we only wear them during the weekday, so therefore at night and on Shabbos, this would not apply, so therefore we assume that tefillin is something that women are not obligated to wear. Kriyashma is something that can only be said in a very particular time of the day, so we assume women are exempt from the mitzvah of kriyashma. Surprisingly, the mitzvah of tkiyas shofar. Now again, we go very much out of our way to make sure that anybody and everybody is able to hear the shofar, but on a strict letter of the law, women are not obligated to go hear the shofar, because that's a classical case of a mitzvah saseh shahazman grama, when you have somebody that is homebound, that is not able to come to shul, so they really don't have the obligation to hear the shofar, because it's something that is only a mitzvah that applies one day of year on Rosh Hashanah. Sitting in the sukkah, as we know, women are not obligated. Can they volunteer? Of course they can volunteer. However, they are not obligated because, again, that's something that's only performed at a certain particular time of year. Shaking the lulav. Most women I know are careful to shake the lulav, but it's not an obligation that they have. Sfiras HaOmer, which is a controversial one, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. And there are a number of examples. What's surprising is that Rashi writes in a number of places. Rashi writes in an Erev in Daf Tzadi Vav. He writes it also in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Lamed Gimel, that if a woman is not obligated to perform a mitzvah and she chooses to do so voluntarily, Rashi writes she's in violation of the concept of Bal Tosif. That you're not allowed to add on to the mitzvahs of the Torah. Now that's a very surprising comment, and the other Rishonim have big issues with Rashi for saying such a thing. What would be wrong with somebody doing something that they're not obligated to do? What could be wrong with that? That's not adding on to the mitzvahs of Torah. The Torah said these are the 613 mitzvahs. The Torah gave a special exemption for women for whatever reason. We'll talk in a few minutes. But how can you say that a woman who volunteers to do something she's not obligated to do is held accountable for that? That's considered to be something wrong that she's doing. She's volunteering to do a mitzvah. So that's why we assume, not like Rashi, we assume like all the other Rishonim, that a woman who wants to go ahead and volunteer to perform a mitzvah has every right to do so. And then there's the pseudo-discussion, which is a machlokas, the Rambam, and other Rishonim, it's a machlokas, the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama, the Svardim and Ashkenazim, whether a woman who volunteers to perform a mitzvah should make a bra on that or not. How can you say vitzivanu? How can you say you instructed us to do this? You didn't instruct us to do this. We were not obligated to do so. We chose voluntarily to do this. So how can you say, sher kedushanam mitzvah vitzivanu? You instructed us to do this mitzvah, you did not. So that's the discussion. So the Shulchan Aruch says that a woman should not make a bracha when she's performing a mitzvah that she's not obligated to do. And we Ashkenazim hold like the Rama that a woman should make a bracha, because after all, vitzivanu, you commanded us generally that we should perform this mitzvah and we have every right to volunteer to do so. And therefore, generally, the Ashkenazic practice is that we all recite a bracha even when we're not obligated to perform the mitzvah, we do it voluntarily because vitzivanu would apply then as well. Now, although this is the rule that when you have a time-bound mitzvah, women are not obligated to perform that mitzvah, there are some notable exceptions that the Gemara discusses. So take, for example, the Gemara writes in Psachim on Daf Mem Gimel that a woman has an obligation, equally like the men, to eat matzah on the night of the Seder. Now, why should that be? Why should a woman have an obligation to eat matzah on the night of the Seder? After all, that's a time-bound mitzvah. You don't have an obligation to eat matzah every day of your life. That would be a big problem. So we don't have this mitzvah. We only have a mitzvah to eat matzah on a very particular day of year, on Pesach. So that should be a classical case of a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. Women shouldn't be obligated to do it. So why do women have the obligation to eat matzah? What? They were all in the miracle. So somebody said that last. It's a nice answer, but it's not the correct one. Why is it not the correct one? Because if I would ask you, just to understand why it's not exactly the right answer, we'll use that answer in a minute for something else. But if I would ask you, why are men obligated to eat matzah? Nothing to do with the miracle. Men are obligated to eat matzah because the pasuk says, Be'erev tochlu matzos. So we eat matzah not because of the miracle. We eat matzah because the Torah says, on the night of Pesach, one should eat matzah. And the Gemara, for some reason, assumes that that pasuk of Be'erev tochlu matzos applies equally to men and to women. Why? If you only have an obligation to eat matzah on the night of the Seder, so that should not apply to women. That should be a classical case of mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. Says the Gemara, the reason why it applies to women is because this is one of those exceptions to the rule. The pasuk says, Shivas yamim lo sochal alav chametz. You're not allowed to eat chametz for the duration of Pesach. And then it says, you have to go ahead, but erev tochlu matzos. You have to go ahead and eat matzah. Says the Gemara, from the fact that those two halachas are said, one right after the other, one right next to the other, therefore we assume anyone who's included in the first part is included in the second part. So women, obviously, are not allowed to eat chametz on Pesach. Therefore, since they're not allowed to eat chametz, it means they also have the positive obligation of going ahead and eating matzah. Those two are interconnected with one another, and therefore we assume women, even though matzah is a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama, it should fall into this category where women are not obligated to perform the mitzvah. We assume that this is an exception to the rule because this mitzvah of eating matzah is said in conjunction with the prohibition of eating chametz throughout the duration of Pesach. Take for another example. The Gemara says in Brachos on Daf Chav that the mitzvah of Kiddush on Shabbos is an equal obligation for men as well as for women. Where do we learn that from? Because the pasuk says, Zachar es yom haShabbos lekadsho. You have an obligation to remind yourself to be mekadesh the Shabbos. How can I be mekadesh the Shabbos? Shabbos comes, Shabbos goes, whether I like it or not. I can be somebody who's not religious. It's still Shabbos. So what does it mean I should be mekadesh the Shabbos? It's here. It's Kedusha without me. So from here the Gemara learns, Zachareyu alayayin, you should be mekadesh it by making kiddush. That will elevate, that will bring more sanctification to the day of Shabbos. So the Gemara assumes this applies equally to men and to women. Why should that be the case? Why should that be the case? This is also something that is a time-bound mitzvah. It only applies on one day a week, on Shabbos or on Yantif. So why should we assume that women are obligated to perform the mitzvah of kiddush? So the answer that the Gemara gives is because, kol sheyeshna b'shamar, Yeshna Bezachar. Since we know that women are included in the prohibition of doing malacha on Shabbos, therefore they're also included in the flip side. They're also included in the mitzvah of making Kiddush on Shabbos. Those two go together. That's what the Gemara says, even though it is a time-bound mitzvah, but we put those two together and women would be obligated to perform that mitzvah. Again, there are a few examples where the Gemara has very unusual ways of learning out why women should be obligated in a particular mitzvah that is time-bound, but on the general scale, we assume that women are exempt from a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. So those are exceptions that we gave on a level of d'oraisa. Again, a woman is obligated mid-d'oraisa in the mitzvah of Kiddush. A woman is obligated mid-d'oraisa in the mitzvah of eating matzah on the night of the Seder. Midrabanan, the Chachamim came along and added some mitzvahs as well that women are obligated. Let's say the mitzvah of Hadlakas Neres Chanukah. So women are obligated equally as men in the mitzvah of Neres Chanukah. Why should that be the case? So there is what everybody said, because they were included in the miracle of Chanukah. Chanukah is all about commemorating the miracle that took place so many years ago, and Mikra Megillah on Purim as well. That's also a commemoration of the miracle that took place so long ago. And in fact, the mitzvah of Dalet Kosas as well. Why do we have the mitzvah of Dalet Kosas? So you'll say, Vehotseisi v'hitzalti. That's not why. That's just, you found the nice remez in the pasuk. The reason why we have Dalet Kosas, the Gemara says, is because the Chachamim, it's a mitzvah midrabanan, the Chachamim instituted that we should drink four cups of wine to commemorate the unbelievable experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So those three examples are mitzvahs midrabanan, where even though they are clearly time-bound, we assume that women are obligated to do them because af hein hayiba osanes. Women were involved in the salvation from Mitzrayim, and the Dalet Kosas are all about commemorating that incredible miracle. Women were involved in the great story of Purim, and therefore we assume they also have to read the Megillah, and women were involved equally in the salvation of Hanukkah, and therefore we assume women have an obligation to do that as well. So those are three notable examples that we have in the Rabbanan, where women share the obligation equally with men. Let's say, take for example, what would you say about the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, the mitzvah on Pesach night to recite the Haggadah? So I know it happens all the time. You have a woman leaves the Seder table in the middle because one of the kids is cranky or whatever, it's time for him to go to sleep. So she goes upstairs to feed the baby, to put the kid to bed, whatever it might be, and 20, 30 minutes later, or however much time later, comes back to the table and they're 5 pages ahead of where they left off. So what happens? Does the woman have to go and recite everything that she missed? Does she have an obligation of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim? Or do you say no? You pick up where you left off. Again, it's nice to be at the table with everybody else. I would say it's nice for the family to wait for their mother. But not everybody has those sensitivities. In our home, whenever my mother left the table to prepare something in the kitchen or whatever, my father said, now's the time to say all your gematrias and everything else. When she's here, we're going to talk the real Haggadah. When she's not here, you'll talk about all the things that are not relevant to the Seder. You know, by our house, it was always very tense, the night of the Seder. So there's different reasons why it's tense at people's homes the night of the Seder. So some people's homes, it's because there are kids running around, and it's a whole scene. And it's late at night. By our house, it was tense because my father always likes to finish not just the Afikoman, but all 4 cups of wine by Chatzos. That's not so easy. It's not so easy, especially when you have a lot of people. We are 9 children, and when we were younger, all 9 kids had their own gematrias. It takes a long time, so it's not so easy. So my father convinced us, as children, that you get the same points if you say the gematrias during the day meals as if you say it at night. So he convinced us that he doesn't want the meals to be boring during the day, so we should save all of that for tomorrow. And at night, he ran the Seder, and he used to say whatever he said, and he would elaborate, and he would talk to all the kids, and whatever it was, but he tried to limit it. But however, whenever my mother walked out of the room to do what she had to do, so my father always told us to wait, and to talk about other things at the time, because he said it's not respectful to her, and we should recognize the fact that women might be obligated in the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim as well. I remember always when we came back to school after Pesach, so the Rabbeim in school always used to ask, so what time did he finish the Seder? So this one's raising his hand like 2:30 in the morning, 3 o'clock, and my family was always like 11:30, I don't know. So that was, I don't know, that's what it was. So anyway, the Sefer HaChinuch writes that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim applies equally to men as it does to women. And the Minchas Chinuch, if you look at number Gimel, Minchas Chinuch asks, I don't understand why that should be the case. Davar zeh chidush gadol etzli. This is very surprising to me. Why we say that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of telling over the Haggadah, applies equally to men and to women? Lama tia noheges mitzvah zu b'nashim. Why should this mitzvah be an obligation for women? Kiven dehavya mitzvah haseisha hazman grama shenashim peturas. This feeds into the basic principle that when you have a time-bound mitzvah that you're only obligated to do on certain particular times of year, women should have an exemption. So why would the Sefer HaChinuch argue that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? It doesn't seem to fit into the rule. So this is a very interesting question. And the Prima Gadim writes, well, because of the fact that the Sefer HaChinuch says women are obligated, you have to make sure, even if you went into the kitchen or even if you went to put a kid to sleep, when you come back, you have to make sure, if the family didn't wait for you, you have to make sure to make up those pages that you left off. So this, again, is something to be concerned about. But the question is, why is that the case? Why should we assume that women are obligated? So the Chayyadim and the Mishnah Berurah give the following suggestion. They say, well, perhaps the reason why is as follows. As we mentioned, women are obligated in the mitzvah of drinking the four cups of wine on the night of the Seder. Why? Because they were involved in the miracle, and the four cups of wine are to commemorate that great miracle that took place on the occasion of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So therefore, women are obligated equally as men, because afein hayba osanes. So says the Chayyadim. We have a Gemara that says, let's say I remember at my parents' house one time, we had a Hatzalah member who came over for the Seder. And in the middle of the Seder, he had a call, and he missed a large portion of the Seder. He came back when we were ready up to Halo. So he wasn't going to eat, whatever it was, I don't know, he wanted to try to rush through the rest of the parts of the Seder that he missed. So he filled up his cup four times, and he drank down four cups of wine to try to catch up to everybody else. So my father mentioned to him what the Gemara says, that shasan bevasachas, if you drink four cups of wine, not in the sequence, but you drink them one after the other without saying the Haggadah in the middle, the Gemara says, lo yatsa yidei chavasa, that doesn't count. The point is not to drink four cups of wine. The point is to incorporate the cups of wine with the whole story of the Haggadah. So says the Chayyadim, if women are obligated to drink four cups of wine because they were a part of the miracle, then women are obligated to say the Haggadah as well, because otherwise the four cups of wine don't mean anything. That's like the Hatzalah guy who sits down and tries to drink down four cups at a time. That doesn't work for them. So therefore we assume, if since women have the obligation to drink the four cups of wine, therefore women also have the obligation to recite the Haggadah in order to give a context to what the four cups of wine are all about. So that's basically with regard to mitzvah saseh shahaz mangram. The Gemara then goes further on to say that when you have a mitzvah saseh shalohaz mangrama, when you have a mitzvah that is not time-bound at all, it's not related to any particular occasion of year, so then the Gemara says women are obligated, obviously, like men are. So therefore the Gemara says, let's say the mitzvah mezuzah, that applies whether it's Shabbos or Yom Tov, whether it's daytime or nighttime. One always has to have a mezuzah on the door, and therefore we assume that women are equally obligated in the mitzvah of mezuzah as men are. The Gemara says the mitzvah of giving tzedakah, women are obligated just like men are. So, again, you might not want to answer the door when a mashulach comes to the door and you have to deal with them. Okay, so you leave it up to the husband. But fundamentally, the mitzvah of tzedakah applies equally to men as it does to women, because it's not a time-bound mitzvah. The Gemara then goes on to say that obviously when it comes to any negative prohibition, when it comes to any aveira, so then the Gemara says clearly that applies equally to men and women alike. That doesn't make a difference whether it's time-bound, whether it's not. Let's say doing malacha on Shabbos, doing malacha on Yom Kippur, or something of that nature, eating on Yom Kippur. All of those negative prohibitions obviously apply equally both to men and to women, eating chametz on Pesach, many examples that we can come up with, but those all apply equally. So now, how do we define what's considered a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama? How do we define what's a time-bound mitzvah? So you'll say to me, that's a very silly question, because it seems that it should be pretty easy to answer. Anything that can only be done in a particular time of day or year is considered to be zman grama. It's considered to be a time-bound mitzvah, but anything that applies equally throughout the year should be considered la zman grama. No? That's what I would have said. So let's give a few test cases, and you'll appreciate, you'll understand what it is that we're trying to get at here. Let's say, take for a test case, the mitzvah of Sviras HaOmer. So the Rambam writes, very simply, the Rambam says, number Vav, the Rambam has here a number Vav on the source sheet. Mitzvah zu al kol ish mi Yisrael uvechal makam uvechal zman. This mitzvah of Sviras HaOmer applies in all generations, even when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, even in Chutz La'aretz, says the Rambam, V'nashem v'avadim p'turim mi-Sviras HaOmer. Women are not obligated in the mitzvah of Sviras HaOmer, and this is what most of the Rishonim write. Because again, Sviras HaOmer is something we only do at a certain time of year. It's something we only do from the Yom Tov of Pesach until the Yom Tov of Shavuos, and therefore we assume that Sviras HaOmer is something that women should not be obligated to perform. This is not only the opinion of the Rambam, this is the Sefer HaChinuch writes that, and that's what the Magen Avraham writes as well, in Siman Taf Pei Tes, in Hilchos Sviras HaOmer, that women do not have an obligation to count Svira. Again, I would imagine most women volunteer to count Svira, why not? And try their best to remember to count Svira throughout the duration of that period of year, but they don't have the obligation because this is a classical case of a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech ha'olam shehakol niyeh bedvaro. So the Ramban surprisingly writes in Maseches Kiddushin Daf Lamed Daled that Sviras HaOmer is something that women are obligated to do. And he says it's not considered to be a Zman Grama. Ran writes that this is not considered to be a mitzvah saseh she'hazman grama, and therefore women are obligated to perform the mitzvah of Sfiras Omer. So how do you explain that, Ramban? How can you say that a mitzvah that is only performed at a very particular time of year is not considered to be time-bound? How does that make any sense? How do you explain that? So there are those who are of the opinion, this is what Rav Soloveitchik mentioned as well, it's a printing mistake. That's the easy answer, to say it's a printing mistake. The Ramban never meant to say it. He didn't really say that. He meant to say that women are pater, like everybody else said, and it's time-bound. And the printer put in that women are obligated and it's not time-bound. Okay, that's one way of answering a question, just to say it's a mistake. But it's hard to say such a thing, because all the old versions of the Ramban have the same mistake, and many different versions of the Ramban have this mistake, so how can you say that all the Svarim are a mistake? So if you don't want to go with that answer, again, there are many who assume, don't waste any time figuring this out, it's a mistake from day one and there's nothing to talk about. But if you assume that it's correct, the version that we have in the Ramban, and you assume that it's not a mistake, so how do you explain why would you justify how Sfiras HaOmer could be something that is not a time-bound mitzvah? So some Achronim suggest very simply, what triggers the Sfiras HaOmer is not the second day of Pesach. Again, we start to count Sfira on the second night of Pesach. So I'll ask you, what triggers the mitzvah of Kiddush on Friday night? The fact that it became Friday night. Now that it's Friday night, the day obligates me to make Kiddush. What triggers my mitzvah to eat matzah? The fact that tonight is the first night of Pesach. What triggers my obligation to count Sfira? Not the fact that it's second night of Pesach. What triggers my obligation, says the Gemara, says the Pasuk, is Miyom HaVeyachem Es Omer HaTnufa. From the day that you offer the carbon in the Beis HaMikdash, which always happens to be on the second day of Pesach. But what triggers my obligation is not the day per se. What triggers my obligation to begin the count of Sfira is the offering of the carbon HaOmer. So you'll ask, someone last night asked very correctly, nowadays that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash and we don't offer the carbon, you're going to say that the whole mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer doesn't apply? That's a very good question. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik asked the question. It's a great question. We won't get into it now because it's not relevant to what we're talking about. But the basic assumption is that the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is not considered to be time-bound because it's not the time that triggers the obligation. It's the event that happens to take place every year on this particular day. That's what triggers this obligation. And therefore we can assume that this mitzvah, although on face value it seems to be a mitzvah saseh she'hazman grama, when you think about it more critically, it's not really time-bound. It's dependent on something else. Let me give another example to bring the point, make it a little bit clearer. The mitzvah of offering the bikurim. So we have a mitzvah when the first fruits grow, you're supposed to take those first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash and give them to the Kohen. Sefer Achinoch writes very simply, what I would have thought, that this mitzvah applies only to men and not to women. Why does it apply only to men and not to women? Well, because it's a time-bound mitzvah. After all, the Mishnah says you can only offer the Bikurim from Sukkot until Chanukah, because that's when the fruits are beginning to grow. After that period of time, the fruits are not fresh anymore, they're not new, and therefore, Bikurim only applies at that particular segment of the year. So I would have said the Sefer Achinoch makes a lot of sense. This is a time-bound mitzvah. But yet, there are many Rishonim who assume, not like the Sefer Achinoch, many Rishonim who argue that women, if they have a farm and they're growing fruits as well, they have to go ahead and bring those first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash the same way men have the obligation to do so. Why would that be the case? If this is something that you only have an obligation to do from Sukkot until Chanukah, only at the season of year when the crops are beginning to grow, so then why should I assume that women have an obligation? That's a classical case of a mitzvah saseh she'hazman grama. How do you explain that? What? So the Achronim answer very simply. It's not that once Sukkot comes along, now I've triggered my obligation to bring the Bikurim. That's not it. What triggers my obligation to bring the Bikurim is the season of year when the fruits begin to grow. If we would have some sort of anomaly, if we would have some sort of strange year, and the fruits would be to grow in June, July, August, instead of growing from, you know, Cheshvan to Kislev, whatever it might be. So maybe the rule would change. But it just so happens to be that season of year turns out to be the same time of year every year. And therefore, it's not the time that obligates the mitzvah Bikurim. It's the event that obligates me in the mitzvah Bikurim. And therefore, we might assume that this is not considered a classical case of a time-bound mitzvah because it's not the time that obligates me in performing this mitzvah. It's rather an event that takes place that obligates me in doing the mitzvah that I have to do. Take another example, the mitzvah of Kiddush Levana. So once a month we have a mitzvah that we're asked to make a bracha on the levana. The levana bechidusha. The Gemara says, haro levana bechidusha. Someone who sees the levana being rejuvenated, being renewed, has to go ahead and recite a bracha of Kiddush Levana. Now the Shala points out that women have the practice not to recite Kiddush Levana. Why not? Why don't women recite Kiddush Levana? Says the Shala, well, after all, the levana used to be a very illuminating part of the galaxy. And after Chava did the terrible mistake in Parshas Bereishis, the Ar HaLevana was limited. The illumination that the levana gives off was diminished. And therefore we assume it would be inappropriate for a woman to go ahead and recite the Kiddush Levana. Now, aside from that being a very strange statement that I find very hard to understand. Again, I don't understand Kabbalah. I don't know what it means. Chava doesn't take and the levana becomes smaller. I don't know what exactly that represents, what it means. But I have a much simpler question. Rashi on Chumash writes that the levana became smaller, nothing to do with Chava, way before her. What happened? Rashi quotes the Gemara Maseches Chulin. Rashi says, originally the plan when the world was created was Shnei HaMa'oros HaGedolim. We're going to have a sun and a moon. Both of them are going to have equal powers in the sky. Both of them are going to illuminate the galaxy. Both of them are going to do their job. It's going to be wonderful. And then the Levana comes to the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, how did you set up the world like this? How do you expect that two of us are going to do the same job equally well? I recently met the Skveri Rebbe at a simcha. So he said to me, where do you live? I said, Woodmere. He says, what do you do? I said, I'm a rabbi in a shul. He says, which shul? I said, Young Yisrael Woodmere. He said, Rabbi, Billet Shul. What do you mean you're the rabbi? I said, I didn't say. I'm one of the people that works there. He says, what do you mean one of the people? How many rabbis do you have? I said, we got a lot. He says, that's the greatest miracle I've ever heard. You can have a few rabbis in one shul that all get along and do the same thing. It doesn't make sense. So again, that was the Levana's Taina. How can you have two people doing the same thing in a shul? How can you have two people lighting up the sky equally? It's not going to work. Ain't shnei malachim mishtam shem kesarecha. It can't be that both of them are going to be able to do their job well. It can't be. So again, we happen to be living the miracle here. But the Levana couldn't imagine such a thing. So the Gemara says, in Maseches Chulin, the Gemara says, you're right. God said to the Levana, you know, you make a good point. I didn't think of that. And because of that, I'm going to have to make you smaller. And that's what happens. The Levana becomes smaller. He registers, I don't think it's a complaint. He makes a point to God that such a thing never works. And God says, you're right. So now we're going to make you smaller. We're going to leave the sun the way it is. We're going to make you smaller. So it would seem to be a clear indication from Rashi, quoting the Gemara, that the reason why women don't recite Kiddush Levana should have nothing to do with Chava being responsible for the Levana becoming smaller. Rashi says there was a whole different reason. So the Shala stands on his head to figure out, no, there were two times when the Levana became smaller. Once was when the Levana had that whole story with his negotiating with God, and the second time was when Chava made the mistake of eating from the Eitz Hadaat. Okay, I don't know. This is Kabbalah. I don't understand it. I don't understand exactly what it represents. Well, let's leave Kabbalah on the side for a minute. If you leave Kabbalah on the side for a minute, the Magen Avraham writes that women are not obligated in the mitzvah of Kiddush Levana because it's a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. It's something that we only do once a month. It's only when you see the Levana in its state of renewal, when it's becoming bigger. So therefore we assume that Kiddush Levana is something that's considered to be a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. And other achronim say that the Magen Avraham is absolutely wrong. What triggers my obligation to say Kiddush Levana? It's not, third day of the month, now I got to say Kiddush Levana. No, what triggers my obligation is Haroa Levana Mechidusha, the rejuvenation of the moon. Now, it just so happens to be that happens at the same time of month every month. But that's not that the date requires me to do so. It's the fact that it's the Roa Levana Mechidusha. It's when I see the Levana rejuvenating itself. That's not called a time-bound mitzvah. There's an event that triggers my obligation to do so. And that event is what makes me make the bracha. So I know that my father has told us that he thinks, in his opinion, he thinks that women should recite Kiddush Levana if they have the opportunity to. Again, some people are busy and it's not so easy to go out at night. But my father's of the opinion that we should recite Kiddush Levana because this is perhaps not a time-bound mitzvah. This is something that is not particularly revolving around time because the time is not what triggers the obligation. It's rather the event of the Kiddush HaLevana that triggers the obligation of reciting the Kiddush Levana. Once we're on that subject of Kiddush Levana, you know, it's very interesting. The Gemara says, when I was a child, so my father used to say Kiddush Levana with me every month, and every month after we finished saying it, I didn't know what I was saying, so every month after we finished saying it, he would ask me, so what do you think? Do you have to stand up when you recite Kiddush Levana, or could you say it sitting down? always wonder, what does he want from me? How am I supposed to know the answer to this? And he would always ask me every month till finally I was old enough to get the answer right. In the Kiddush Levana, it says, Hilkach tzarech lememra mu'umad. In the paragraph of Kiddush Levana that we say, it says, you must say this standing up. It quotes a Gemara. So he wanted to see if I'm understanding the words that I'm saying. So he kept asking me the question, and every month I asked him, I don't know, what's the answer? He said, I don't know, think about it. So I would always think about it. I had no idea where I should get the answer from until I was old enough to understand the words I was saying. And I said, hey, here's the answer. He said, it was always there. So why do we have to stand up when we recite Kiddush Levana? So the Gemara says the reason why is because we assume that the Shechina is present when we recite Kiddush Levana. Very interesting. We don't assume that the Shechina is present when a person shakes lulav. We don't assume the Shechina is present when he blows shofar. When one recites Kiddush Levana, we assume the Shechina is present. The Shechina is there. So my father once told me the following. He said, in the name of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, if you have once a month opportunity where the Shechina is actually going to be there at the time that you recite Kiddush Levana, I would use that opportunity to ask for all the things that have been bothering me over the past month. You know how many people in this community alone have been inflicted with illnesses over the past month alone? So I would use the opportunity of Kiddush Levana when God's actually here, he's coming to listen to me, to talk to him about all the terrible illnesses and to talk to him about all the terrible marriages and about all the things that are going on in this community that are so terrible. And I would ask him to just bring an answer to all these terrible stories that are going on. Shouldn't we use the opportunity of Kiddush Levana to do that? And yet, you look through Kiddush Levana, the text that we have in the Siddur, you look through it later, and there's only one place where we offer a bakasha. There's only one line that we ask for something. What do we ask for? Yehi ratzon, may it be your will, lemalos pegimas halavana. Here's my chance. Once a month, God is here, he's listening to me, this is why I have to stand up when I recite the paragraph. Let me use the opportunity, God, to ask you for the following that really bothers me, really pains my heart. You see, a few thousand years ago, you made the moon small. And I ask you, Yehi ratzon, lemalos pegimas halavana, do me a favor, because this is really bothering me. I would like for you to please restore the moon to its original size. And there's no reason for the moon to be as small as it is. Now, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik pointed out, I don't know anybody that is bothered by that. Now, let alone the fact that there's no reason why we shouldn't be asking for all the things that really bother us, but the one thing that we come up with is something that nobody has ever thought of in their life, that nobody is bothered by, even when you look at the moon. Who cares? Okay, the moon is doing what it's doing. It's God's problem to figure out what's going to be with it. Why do we ask on the occasion of Kiddush Levana, Yehi ratzon lemalos pegimas halavana, please fill in the deficiency of the moon. So my father told me once the following interpretation, that when you think about that story that we quoted from Rashi, why did the moon become smaller? Why was it diminished? Because it went to God, and it made a very simple point. It wasn't complaining. The moon was just saying, I don't understand how you set up the system. What's supposed to happen? The moon is going to do a job. The sun is going to do the job. How are we both supposed to do the job equally? It doesn't make sense. You don't need both of us. God says, you're right. We're going to squash you. You don't deserve to be as big as you were. That's essentially tzadik v'ralo. That's essentially a person being put into this world, asked to do a job, doing their job perfectly, doing exactly what they're supposed to do without asking any questions, and yet they get punished. And we say to ourselves when we watch things like that, why is it fair? Why is it fair that good people suffer? And this is the greatest philosophical question that any philosopher in our Jewish religion has ever been bothered with. Why is it that tzadik v'ralo? This is what Moshe Rabbeinu was bothered with. Explain to me, Moshe Rabbeinu asked, why is it that good people suffer? And the Ribbono Shel Olam said, you'll never understand it. You'll never understand it. This is what we ask the Ribbono Shel Olam on Kiddush Levana. The most profound philosophical question that has bothered the Jews for so many thousands of years. Lemalos pegimas halavana. When is going to come the time when you'll explain to us why things like that happen? When is going to come the time that you'll make it make sense to us? Why is it that the Levana was punished for no good reason? The Levana was doing its job. It didn't complain. It was doing everything you asked it to do. And yet it suffered. And this is what we use the occasion of Kiddush Levana to ask for, probably that which bothers most of us more than anything else. Why is it that so often either ourselves or other people that we know suffer even though they're doing exactly what God wants them to do? I think it's something to think about. Whether you say Kiddush Levana or not, it's a different story. But to think about that point, that the one bakasha that we ask for in Kiddush Levana is Lemalos Begimus HaLevana. That God should give us insight and understanding as to why it is that so often we see that people go through experiences like that. So we've talked about Mitzvah Saseisha Hazman Grama. We've said that women are generally exempt, they're not obligated in those mitzvahs. And the question is, why is that the case? Why should we assume that women are exempt from a mitzvah that is a time-bound mitzvah? So the Abu Dram, in the 1300s, one of the Rishonim in Spain, writes that perhaps the reason why women are not obligated is, again, it's hard for us to understand this because our whole understanding of marriage and relationship nowadays is not at all like it was then. So just take it in a context, and you'll see in a minute why we're bringing it. Abu Dram says, well, a woman's going to have such a difficult time. Why? Because if she's going to say, now I have to go do a mitzvah for God, her husband's going to say, what do you mean? What about me? And Arla mi bala. She's going to have so much tension that she's disregarding her husband. And if she chooses to disregard her husband and to give the respect, I'm sorry, if she chooses to disregard God and actually give the attention to her husband at that time, Arla mi yitzra. So says the Abu Dram, we don't want a woman to have these major problems, and we don't want her to have to deal with this tension of figuring out, who should I give my attention to? So therefore we say, anything that's time-bound, we don't want you to have these problems. So you're not obligated to do it. Now again, I don't think that our understanding of marriage nowadays is such. I don't think our understanding of marriage is that a woman has to be at the beck and call of her husband every moment, every second of the day. Maybe that's the way it was in the 1300s, it could be. But nowadays, that's a very difficult thing for us to swallow. So is there another reason why women perhaps are not obligated in a time-bound mitzvah? Says Rav Shamsham Rafal Hirsch, a very different approach, so beautiful, so eye-opening. And it gives a very different perspective. Rav Hirsch was one of the great leaders of the 1800s. Says Rav Hirsch as follows. We are on the bottom, number 9, tests. She'enenu yachalios. It is impossible, says Rav Hirsch, that the reason why women are not obligated in the mitzvah haseh shahazman grama is because of chisusan, because they're not up to it, like some people think, because they are not worthy of these mitzvahs, like some people argue. He says, I find that ridiculous. That could be. A woman doesn't have the same opportunity as a man. A woman is not able to do it. A woman doesn't have the mind for this. How can you argue that? Says Rav Hirsch, ki'ilu ha-Torah svura, as if the Torah says, she'ein hein ru'uyos l'kayim osan ha-mitzvahs, you think a woman is not up to par enough to be able to perform those mitzvahs, says Rav Hirsch, you can't say such a thing. So what is the reason? Ela nira lanu lomar kach, says Rav Hirsch, the reason why I suggest that women are not obligated in the mitzvahs haseh shehazman grama is because mipnei she'ein hein zukukos lahem, because they don't need them. What does that mean, they don't need them? So Rav Hirsch goes on to explain a very insightful comment. The Ribbono Shel Olam set up a system with 613 mitzvahs. So I'm busy, I'm a lawyer, I'm doing late hours at work. I don't have time to shake the lulav, sit in sukkah. What, I'm going to keep taking off like this? You know what? I'm going to tell my law firm I'm going to work 10 months a year. 2 months a year I'm going to take off. I'm going to perform all 613 mitzvahs and I'll knock them off in 2 months. What do I need this for? I'll sit in the sukkah the same time I shake the lulav and I'll light the Neres Chanukah in the sukkah. I'll listen to the shofar, I'll eat the matzah. What do I have to do this? I have to keep taking off vacations and all the Yom Tovim? Why not do everything at once? Why are we laughing? Why can't we do that? Says Rav Hirsch, well, the reason why the Torah set up a system where you have mitzvos periodically throughout the year is because if we would do that and just knock off all the mitzvos in a 2-month period, the other 10 months we wouldn't have anything to do with God. So God set up a system that you can't forget about me. You know how you can't forget about me? Because I'm going to make sure that on Rosh Hashanah you're going to blow the shofar, and very soon after that you're going to fast on Yom Kippur. Right after that you're going to sit in the sukkah. A few months later you're going to light the Hanukkah candles, then you're going to listen to the Megillah, and then it's going to come Pesach, you're going to have to be busy with that, and you're going to eat the matzah and everything, and this way I can't get away from him. And every week is Shabbos, and you're never going to forget about God. Says Rav Hirsch, men need that reminder, because otherwise their minds are all over the place. But women, he writes, that are created much more spiritually sensitive from the outset, and much more in tune with what God's vision is from this world. Again, obviously we have exceptions. Some women aren't, and some men are. But he's saying in general, women are much more spiritually sensitive than men are. Therefore, he argues they don't need those built-in reminders. Women don't need the shofar on Rosh Hashanah to remind them that there's a God in the world. They know that there's a God in the world. They're much more in tune with reality than the men are. They're much more traditional than the men are. And therefore, says Rav Hirsch, it's not that women are exempt from these mitzvahs because we don't think they're up to it, but rather he argues it's because they don't need it. They don't need those built-in reminders. They want to go ahead and perform it, matov manaim, good for them. But the women are not obligated to do so because they don't need these reminders that are built into the system for the men to remind themselves of. You ever think about every morning the women recite a bracha, she'asani kirtzono? What does it mean, she'asani kirtzono? What? According to your will. I take major offense to that. Was I not created according to God's will? Whose will was I created for? Someone else? So you recite a bracha she'asani kirtzono. And what about all the men in the world? I say shalom asani isha. Okay. So, but what does the pasuk mean? What does it mean? She'asani kirtzono, you made me like your will. I was also made like your will. So the Torah writes, the Torah says, she'asani kirtzono means it's like, I accept it. I don't understand why you made me in a way that you didn't obligate me in all these mitzvahs. I don't understand why I'm not obligated in all the different mitzvahs that the men are supposed to be doing. But okay, I accept it. Like a tzidduk hadin, says the Torah. But says Rav Kook and others, the Hafla writes this as well, that's not what she'asani kirtzono means. You know what she'asani kirtzono really means? She'asani kirtzono means I thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for making me more in line with his will. I thank him for creating me in a way that I'm more spiritually in tune with what his will is. The men were created with heads that are all over the place. And the women were created to be more deeply rooted and connected with himself. And for that, we owe him a great debt of gratitude. She'asani kirtzono, I thank you for making me much more in line with your ultimate will, with the way you want the world to run. I thank you for putting me in a place where inside of my heart I have an intrinsic connection with you, and I'm always looking to find you in my life and to discover your presence in what significance you play in my life. Yeah.
Beautiful, but you're putting down men and the potential of men in the same way that, you know, you were dismissing what the Shalah said about it's not good.
Okay.
You're saying that men are not capable, therefore, in the same way that we say that women shouldn't be doing it because they're not.
No, we're saying that men were not created with the same spiritually, as spiritually inclined as women were. I don't think that's putting anyone down. I think it just means men and women are very different. Everyone would agree to that. The Kli Yakar writes on Chumash, Parsha Shlach. The Kli Yakar says, the Pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu sends out Meraglim. So the Pasuk starts off and it says, Shlach Lecha Anashim, says the Kli Yakar. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's first mistake. Had he sent a group of women, this never would have happened. Because the men are the ones, again, it's the Kli Yakar talking. The Kli Yakar, what?
There's nothing wrong with that kind of thinking.
Okay. Okay. Again, there could be many interpretations. This is one school of thought that I think is a very meaningful one. I think it's a very meaningful one, and I think it's at least something to consider. Okay.
So where does Shiloh Asana Isha fit with that, what you were just saying?
Yeah.
Women are more spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Why are men thinking that they're not women?
Again, men and women were created very differently. You take, for example, the Pasuk says, it's actually relevant to this week's Parsha. The Pasuk says, Kemase Eretz Mitzrayim, Lo Sasun. The Pasuk tells us we have an Isser, don't ever do like the Mitzrayim did. What exactly does that mean? One of the beautiful Svarim writes, heard this recently, from Rabbi Moshe Tzvi Weinberg, who spoke here, he said, a beautiful insight. Kemase Eretz Mitzrayim, what did the Mitzrayim do? Aside from all the oppression, one of the most oppressive things that they did was, they switched the roles of men and women, and they said, men have to do women's jobs, and women have to do men's jobs. That's what the Pasuk warns us. Kemase Eretz Mitzrayim. Women should appreciate what their role is in life, and men should appreciate what their role are in life. It doesn't mean anyone should feel bad about having a different role. Everybody has a different tafkid, everybody has a different job, everybody's supposed to do something else, and everybody's created differently. That's what I don't see why that should be offensive at all. Kemase Eretz Mitzrayim, that's what we're asked not to mix up the gender roles, that everybody should be comfortable with what they do.
It's offensive because it's in the negative. Asani Isha right after Shaloh Asani Eved. So it's kind of puts it in the same category.
So do you find it offensive to all the non-Jews in the world when we say Shaloh Asani Goy?
Yes.
Do you? Should be the same, right? We don't mean that as an offense at all. We don't mean it as an offense. Again, it's something. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying to think about it in that light. Many people talk about, oh, Shaloh Asani Isha. How come they never thought about the two brachas before that, which are the same, which are in the same negative on the negative? And why, for that matter, once you're on brachas, why don't we say all them in a positive? Why don't I say Shasani Israel? Why don't I say Shasani Ben Chorin, Shasani Ish? Again, it's a question. Maybe once you're talking about tefillah, happy to talk about that another week. But these are all very important questions. So again, we've spoken about, what time is it? Oh, it's already almost out of time. So we've spoken about a lot of the mitzvahs haseh shazman grama. So now let's zero in once again on tefillah. Let's get back to where we started. What would you say should be the women's obligation in tefillah? If I were to pose the question, is tefillah considered something that's time-bound or not? It certainly should be considered time-bound, but should not be obligated to do that the same way they're not obligated to blow shofar and to shake the lulav. And yet you look in the Gemara in Brachos Daf Chaf, this is number Yud Aleph, where the Gemara says as follows. Nashim v'avanim uktanim, p'tur mi kriyashma, women are not obligated to recite kriyashma, they're not obligated to wear tefillin, however, chayavim b'tfila, women are obligated to daven, uvim mezuzah, obviously a mezuzah is something that applies by day or by night, uvavirchas hamazon. Women have to bench as well. Ask the Gemara, why should women have to daven? This is a classical case of a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. This is a classical case. Every 24 hours you have to daven once in the morning, once in the afternoon, once at night. Why should I assume that women are part of that obligation? That's a real case of a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. Says the Gemara, the answer is, rachamei ninhu. You're right. It is time-bound. But since tefillah is the opportunity that we have as human beings to present ourselves and ask for God's mercy, therefore women need to have that opportunity to do so as well. Therefore women are obligated to do that, because how can a woman go through life without having that chance, without having that opportunity to ask for God's rachmanis, to ask for His mercy? So says the Gemara, I would have thought that it's a mitzvah haseh shehazman grama because you have to daven morning, evening, and night. Kamash malan, says the Gemara, that's not the case. So that's the major discussion. What does it mean it's not the case? What does it mean it's not the case? Is it not the case because on a biblical level we only have an obligation to daven once a day, and therefore it's not considered a time-bound mitzvah? Or is it not the case because, again, there are two ways of understanding what the Gemara's conclusion is. This is what the Rambam and the Ramban are disagreeing about. As we started, the Rambam and the Ramban have a disagreement whether this is a Mrs. Asay Midaraisa, whether this is biblical, or whether it's only rabbinic. The Rambam understands this Gemara to mean women are obligated to daven because davening is not something that is time-bound. Davening is something a person has to do once a day, every day. We don't tell you when, we don't tell you how, we don't tell you what to say. You figure out on your own what you're going to say. Your primary obligation on a level of the Haraisa is to daven once a day, every day. Whatever text you're going to say, whatever time you're going to daven, that's what the Rambam says is the primary obligation. And therefore the Rambam says women are obligated because that's like mezuzah. There's no given time to do that. That's in every 24-hour period you have to find 1 minute to daven. You have to find 5 minutes to daven. You have to carve out a time where you're going to daven. That's what the Rambam's opinion is. However, others disagree and say, no, that's not what the conclusion of the Gemara is. The Gemara's conclusion is that it is a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, that it is time-bound, that we do have to daven three times a day. But still, this is one of those exceptions to the rule where women are obligated the same as men because rachamei ninhu, because tefillah, because davening is the opportunity for a person to ask for mercy, to ask for everything they need in life. And therefore, we assume that even though it is time-bound, this is going to be one of those exceptions to the rule where women would be obligated to perform the mitzvah the same way men are, because this is something that is rachamei ninhu. This is such a fundamental core of everything we believe in. It's so important for our lives, and therefore we assume that everybody needs to have that obligation equally, because that's something that you cannot live life without. Now again, obviously as we mentioned, a person who is busy raising children or doing whatever they're doing, has to do whatever they have to do. Like the Chazon Ish wrote, he said, the same way that we find if somebody is Torah b'machsheves mitzvah, somebody who's involved in a great mitzvah opportunity, let's say the Gemara says, somebody who's taking care of a dead body, for whatever reason, you have to take care of the dead body, the Gemara says, you don't say Kriyat Shema, you don't daven, you're busy doing another mitzvah, so that's what you do. So to say the Chazon Ish, a person who is busy taking care of young children or raising their family, doesn't have the head, doesn't have the mind, they're Torah b'machsheves mitzvah. They're involved in another very important mitzvah activity, and therefore they don't have the opportunity, they don't have the obligation to daven. However, if we're talking about people who are beyond that stage, who are not busy with raising their children, who are not busy with taking care of something of that nature, so then we assume that the mitzvah to daven every day is a major question. The Mishnah Brura has, in the end of the day, has a major question as to how do we understand the role of women in davening? And that question boils down to, how do you understand what the conclusion of this Gemara actually is? Does the Gemara mean to conclude that, in fact, it is not a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama, it is not time-bound because your primary obligation is only to daven once a day, every day, and as long as you offer a five-minute tefillah, that's good enough, and that's why women should be equally obligated because it's not a zman grama? Or is the conclusion of the Gemara that it is mangram? It does depend on time, but since this is such an important characteristic of what should make up our day, therefore women will be included in the obligation the same way men are. So this is, again, something very important. If we have time to daven, if we're not at that stage where we're taking care of young children, we should go ahead and daven, we should carve out time. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman writes in Halicha Shlomo that once we assume that women are obligated in tefillah, they should stick to the zmanei tefillah as well. There's no reason, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, why a woman should have the right to daven after this man tefillah is over. Again, if in the morning you were too busy taking care of the children or the grandchildren or doing whatever had to be done, so you missed it. Same way if a man was doing a dvar mitzvah, he also missed it. You can't daven. But if that's not the case, we should not push off the tefillah later than this man tefillah. I mentioned this a few weeks ago to somebody who asked, and they took a very serious offense to that comment. I'm not sure why, but I later showed them that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes that very clearly. It wasn't my saying it. And they still didn't like it, which is fine, so take it or leave it. But this is what Rav Shlomo Zalman writes, that once a woman has the time to daven, once the woman has the frame of mind to daven, she should try to stick to the zmanei tefillah the same way a man is obligated to stick to the zmanei tefillah. Questions? Yeah?